Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest for the whole half hour I'm very excited about is Carmen Petrie, who is the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center, an organization that helps victims of domestic violence. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
This is your life, obviously. This is a heavy topic for this show because we interspersed it with less heavy topics, but this is your career, this is your life, this is what you've dedicated to, is trying to curb what is a rising and increasing issue.
You know, it's a human rights issue. I think of it that way. And it is the water in which I swim. I've been here about 38 years trying to think about what is it that makes humans hurt other humans, you know, and what does it mean to come from a place where you have witnessed hurt and harm. So I've been hanging out. Someday I say I need to go and work in a bookstore or bakery or something that has nothing to do with people hurting others. But it's where I stand now at this moment in time.
And it is a rough moment in time. As of right now, is the statistic correct that in Wisconsin, every 5 days, someone dies of domestic violence?
Yes, and it's getting worse. You know, I say it's a human rights issue because we all deserve, as humans, to live in safety and security just by being human. We're facing not only, you know, a pandemic that's shifting into an endemic with COVID that has made everything worse, but violence against women, children, and those who are vulnerable has been present for a long time. But it's much worse right now, and the challenges we have around lethal violence, strangulation, stalking, the kinds of things that women are facing, and the number of women who are dying is at a level I've never seen it before.
And from your expertise, from what you're seeing firsthand, it's rising because of all of the economic and insecurity and housing and so many of the other issues that are putting heightened stress on people and the way that they deal with it? Or like what, why?
That's a good question. I get asked a lot, you know, is poverty caused? Is COVID caused? I say, you know, those things don't organically make violence happen where the seeds of violence were not present already. I think what COVID has done is made everything harder for all of us, women in particular. But, you know, when your future's uncertain, you lose your job, you're locked down in your home, you don't know what's coming at you. You're living in a state of survival. And the human body, our nervous systems were not built to live in anxiety and uncertainty. And so you adapt into what you know. And some people have learned that violence is a behavior that others used, and it's a behavior that works, and they resort to that under stress. So there's this relationship between stress and uncertainty and hardship and the use of violence.
We're talking to Carmen Petrie, who's the CEO of the Sojourner Family Peace Center. And I guess we can back up a little bit and talk more about what Sojourner does.
Sure. We run the Family Peace Center on 6th and Walnut in Milwaukee. We help women, men, and children who've been hurt, either sexually assaulted, battered, victims of trafficking, victims of child abuse. We run a shelter, hotline. We have systems advocacy, case management, and healing services for people. You know, we try to walk with people. There are programs in every county in the state, so Sojourner's not alone in that. We stand with other programs. So we have a shelter, 53-bed shelter, full. We have a waiting list. And then we have lots. We serve about 8,500 people a year. And sometimes we have one contact. Sometimes we stay connected for years with our clients. Our goal is to walk with you as you're traveling through safety and security, and then, you know, healing and what that might look like for you.
And when end of July, early August, when we had a meeting together, and we were talking about campaigns and things that we can do for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And one of the resources that Sojourner provides that I think is wildly important is, as you guys talk about, going further upstream.
Right.
And instead of just helping women or anyone who's already in a bad situation, but also you have resources for the people who are actually doing the violence and education and trying to get further to the root cause before bad situations happen, correct?
Right. I think, you know, there are all kinds of ways that people, women in particular, are choosing to navigate their situations. And not every survivor wants to leave. They love the person. They have hope about the relationship, just like all of us, right, when you get connected. So they love the person. They have hope. They have children. So they need a range of options that are available to them, one of which might be leaving and going to shelter. But the other, you know, is how do we help you stay in your circumstance and create the safety and the healing that you need? Going upstream for me is giving, for us, the two principles of autonomy and self-determination are important. I recognize in you, as a human, as a woman, you have the right to make your own autonomous, self-determining decisions instead of taking that over for you because I'm so afraid about your safety. You know, so we stand alongside people as they're making choices that fit in the reality of what they want. And some people, it's leaving, some it's going into the court system, calling police. But for many, there are other places that doors need to be open: churches, schools, community-based organizations, neighborhoods, street by street. So wherever you turn, there is someone who's willing and able to listen to you if you come forward after being hurt. And part of that is saying, we also want to heal people who are hurting other people in our culture. We're not going to arrest ourselves out of this problem, right? We're not going to punish people into change. We're going to love people into change, and we do that by getting there as soon as we can and saying to them, it's not acceptable for you to be doing what you're doing, and we're going to help you heal.
Do the perpetrators, I'm so curious from the point of view of the perpetrators, Carmen, and I'm sure a lot of them experienced abuse themselves.
Yes.
And witnessed abuse themselves, to get out of that mindset that this is how I deal with situations that make me angry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think the work with people who cause harm and hurt others is twofold. We need to make space to hold their own hurt. You know, we're born whole as humans. We come in without the desire to hurt others. We learn it, and we adapt by using this behavior by being in circumstances that we can't tolerate, right? So you're witnessing something, you have to get out of the circumstance, and so you adopt behavior, you freeze, you fight, you run. So we have to hold space for the ways that people who've caused harm, in particular men, have been hurt. And we need to say, that is valid. I'm going to hear that and help you. I'm not going to let you use it as an excuse, but I'll make space for it. Because I think there's not enough healing services for men and not enough services, healing services for people who cause harm. And then the second part is learning other behaviors that help them deal differently with the circumstances in their life. I think the two are interrelated.
And one of the things that you just said that stood out to me is we're not going to arrest people out of this problem.
Right.
And at some point over the summer, I was talking to a police officer. He was off duty, but he was talking about some of the horrific things as first responders, police see with the rising cases of domestic violence in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, and he's obviously upset by it, mm-hmm. but his first response was exactly that. They go back, the women mm-hmm. go back. And so how much of, not necessarily Sojourner, but in general, is this also part of that mentality, that framework for our first responders, as they are the people who are usually the people there, that the first people that are called in violent situations, as far as having them also understand why women stay, why right. they go back?
I think I understand the frustration. And for me, you know, the downstream, which is where we're anchored, when public safety is needed, when you're being raped or battered or beaten, or a gun is being put in, to your head. You need a public safety approach. But for every time we call law enforcement, there are literally hundreds of times we missed opportunities to help that person in our society. We live in a victim-blaming society where we say, well, why don't you do something to help yourself? Well, it's really not about her or him if he's being hurt. It's about why do we have humans amongst us that feel like they have a right or that it's acceptable to hurt others. And so we need to put the focus on that and helping to hold people compassionately accountable and say to officers, we understand, and EMT, your frustration, but let's deal with it so that every single time you show up, you can be as compassionate and open and as objective as that person deserves and you need to be. And we need to partner law enforcement and EMT with advocates, because advocates can move a situation forward sometimes easier than law enforcement. You know, I'll give you an example. There was a woman who horrendous violence was happening, could not get her to cooperate. I think there were 17 incidents. And when the advocates went out to the scene with officers, had a private confidential conversation, we learned that she was not going to leave the situation until she could figure out what to do with her cats. And as soon as we told her there was a foster family we could get for her cats, she started cooperating.
Interesting.
Left the circumstance. Now, that might not be something she would have told the officer, but an officer and an advocate working together, I think, is an ideal circumstance where you create some confidentiality, try to get at the heart of what's keeping that person sort of stuck in place, right? Because there's something that's keeping them there, a need, a desire, a fear, and we have to help resolve that. And I think law enforcement is a part of that.
Absolutely. All right, well, we have to take our first break, but our guest this half hour is Carmen Petrie, who's the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. When we come back, I want to hear more about the high-risk team and some of the funding that's just been made available from Governor Tony Evers. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest, who is actually going to stay until 12:48 because she has time, is Carmen Petrie, who's the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. And we are talking about the rising cases of domestic violence, because this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, as well as being Breast Cancer Awareness Month. But before you guys got here, I replayed, you know, one of those two gets a lot of attention in October, and the other one does not get as much attention. And right. I made a joke about that a couple of years back. But one of the when we first met, I feel like in the headlines that come out from Milwaukee specifically, mm-hmm. and how much crime and crime rising, and sometimes I think the cognitive dissonance between what people think when they think of rising crime rates, it's random shootings. It's the Waukesha parade from right. a year ago. It is the Deer District shooting. But part of those numbers is domestic violence. And what I think sometimes people don't understand is how much those things can be inextricably linked, as far as a lot of times with mass, as far as I understand it, mm-hmm. people who have committed mass murders or yeah. attempted them, it started in the house.
Yeah, almost 100%. started in the home. I think violence is something that you learn. It's a behavior you learn in the home. All violence, for me, because I do this work, comes from the home. We're not born as humans with this desire to, oh, I'm going to wake up one day and rob your, you know, steal your car. It's a learned behavior that we pick up from those who are around us, and a way that we learn how to adapt in stressful, chaotic circumstances. So it's all interconnected, in my opinion, and sometimes domestic violence can be the first sign or one of the signs that we need to take more seriously. We especially need to pay more attention to children who witness violence. Not every child who grows up in a violent home will become a perpetrator or hurt others, but there's a statistical likelihood that they're going to struggle, both by becoming a victim and a survivor, I hope, or by hurting other people. We do what we learn.
Yeah. Carmen, I get so frustrated, and I know this isn't fair, because men are also victims of domestic violence, but the vast majority of victims are women and children. And I don't feel there is enough discussion among men with their friends on this topic. And is shaming each? I mean, when we have yet another NFL player who's being abusive, or another big sports star who's being abusive, and I just wish they would pressure each other more, that this is not acceptable.
Yeah, I can share your frustration, Jane. I think men need to see that there is a role for them to play. And I think there's some efforts that have been bubbling up. You know, I think when you move to the human rights framework, it makes it a little easier. Sometimes we get polarized into, well, this is a woman's issue versus, you know, a woman's state versus not. This is about human beings needing to be held accountable, compassionately. And we need to work with children who are exposed so they don't grow in that legacy. But men definitely have a role in talking to other men about their behavior and what's acceptable around masculinity. The other thing that I don't think we take enough accounting of is the box that men live in around their masculinity. You know, we live in a toxic masculine culture that blames people who are hurt and vulnerable. Men have a role to play in changing that. That's vital. There's a program called To Men, a national program. But we definitely, and we need to say, hey, you need to be part of this conversation. You need to be talking to your brothers, your uncles, to each other about what kind of world they envision for their daughters, their sisters, their mothers, their grandmothers.
And to take that a step further, it's not just men on a personal level, but it's also community partners. I mean, mm-hmm. The pushback that it seems like you've gotten as far as businesses, local businesses that want to help in some way or talk about it or even put the hotline numbers up in visible places in their storefronts.
Right.
And yeah. What do you, is it because it's just so uncomfortable?
I think it is uncomfortable. I think, you know, this is something that happens in private, and we've been taught that what happens behind doors is none of our business. Well, it is our business, because violence in the home and in relationships spills out everywhere in the community, and we pay a price for that. We're publishing a report next week about the economic cost of domestic violence and lost productivity, loss of life, health care, mental health costs. You know, we pay a price, and we're sitting silently near each other in suffering. There are people we go to church with, people we work with, people we see at schools who are in circumstances where they're hurting, and we have the opportunity to make a difference and open a door, which is why we want to partner with everyone. We did get a little pushback from some businesses who were like, well, we don't want to put those up. And I'm like, well, you have survivors walking in your doors all the time.
We have Dave texting in from the Shaw. He says, speaking as a small business owner, it's really tough to navigate how best to stick to my beliefs and also not drive away half of my customer base, even to the point where I pick and choose what holidays I will make note of on my social media.
You are right. It is very hard and complex to navigate that. I think the more simple we make the message, if you're being hurt by someone, there's help. I say there's a couple of simple messages people need to hear. If you're being hurt, it's not your fault, you're not alone, and I'm here to help. And I think that can include men and women. Do something that's comfortable for you in your environment. If it's not possible, then maybe just get yourself educated as a business owner so that if someone walks in and has an issue, you can direct them in the right direction. For some, it might be putting up a sticker or a poster in the bathroom. I get that there's complexities in life and how we choose to navigate issues. It can be hard.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break, but when we come back, Carmen Petry will still be here. She is the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Problem is all inside your head. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, our guest for the next 15 minutes and has been here for the beginning of the hour, is Carmen Petry, who's the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. And we were talking about their work as far as helping when it comes to domestic violence in the Milwaukee area, and also just the unfortunate trend that we're seeing right now is the increase of domestic violence is increasing in Milwaukee, in Waukesha, across the state, across the country.
Across the world, I think. Violence has continued to be at epidemic proportions for women. And I know we were talking about men earlier and the challenge that they have with coming forward. I think we need to create safety for men to be able to come forward when they've been victimized. For men who want to come forward, it questions their entire masculinity, right, if they've been victimized by someone. So I think it's important for us to make it safe, but also to realize that violence plays out along gender lines in this country, in this world. So violence looks different in the lives of women and in the lives of men.
Greg, did you have a question?
Well, that answered my question.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
You know, I think that we have to make space for men to own their own emotion.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. We're not taught to, I don't think we're taught to recognize the patterns. And if it does happen, we just accept it as something that just happens to us, and we have to deal with it and stuff it down, and
right,
we move on. And then that is what breeds violence towards others. I mean, very quick personal story. I feel very fortunate. My father was the victim of physical and verbal violence growing up. Mm-hmm. And he made a decision. My mother told me the story. He made a decision. He's like, when I have children, I will never do that to them.
Right.
It was a conscious. And I know people have tempers.
Right.
And I'm sure there was times he wanted to raise a hand to me. And what raising a hand to me is nowhere near what other people have. But for him, it was such a backslide that he just could never do it.
Right.
Because he wanted to break that cycle, because he saw in his growing up what it had done to himself. And he never wanted to put that on his children ever.
Yeah, I like that you brought up cycle breakers, because I think there are many of us who are alive, who break that cycle of violence from one generation to the next. Yeah. There are many people who can't, and we need to help and get there as soon as we can. But we need to appreciate the people that are successful in breaking that cycle. And I think it's from doing your healing work, mm-hmm, you know, owning your feelings, getting what you need to be able to build a different life than your parents were able to do. I love the concept of cycle breakers, because they're so critical. It's a tremendous thing that your dad did not lift his hand, mm-hmm, and hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, when he had that experience himself, it's very hard to be a cycle breaker as well.
Carmen, you had mentioned earlier about the definition of masculinity and what men have to deal with, and there has been some dangerous rhetoric coming from some politicians. I can think of one in particular from North Carolina who did not get reelected. But at some of his campaign appearances, he was telling women, raise your sons to be monsters. Mm-hmm. Raise your sons to be monsters.
Yeah, that's awful. I think we should not be promoting any kind of violence in our culture. We should not be teaching our children how to grow up to hurt other people. There's enough hate to go around. And look at the consequences of what we're trying to deal with as humans in humanity. Too much hate, too much harm. And I think part of it is there's, you know, at the heart of it, we're disconnected. You hurt another human being when you are not connected to yourself and other people, when you haven't received the love that you needed, and you use violence as a way to adapt. And we all deserve a different world. We should not be living with this level of violence, and certainly shouldn't have a legislator promoting that we grow our children into monsters. That's the problem. You know, I had a colleague of mine that said on a national level, he said, we do grow our criminals at home. We do. And some of them go on to commit, you know, mass shootings. They hurt all of us in a variety of ways.
Well, in the, I guess, response to this increasing problem, it's been a problem for a long time, but as far as numbers going up, Governor Evers announced additional investments into domestic violence programs. Sojourner is the recipient. And specifically, I think the article I read is that you're getting $1 million.
We are.
Which is great.
Yes, it is. It was fantastic. What I wanted to say, I had a reporter ask me recently, how long has violence against women been around?
Oh, God.
And I said, forever. Eve? No, I'm joking. But it's been so persistent. So I think both things are true. We have far too many women who are vulnerable, children who are vulnerable, and men. So I want to say that there's too much hurt and harm. The high-risk model that we've been running for 5 years is a very effective model. 38 years ago, I could not tell you who was going to be the abuser that was going to murder their victim. Today, we have the technology to do that.
For technology or just more research or both?
Technology, I mean the tools, the resources.
Okay.
So we have something called the Lethality Assessment Protocol that law enforcement uses throughout Milwaukee County, throughout the state, actually. It's a series of 11 questions, and based on your answers, you get assigned a risk score. So you might have a risk score of 24, 25, 26, which is the highest level. And for 5 years, we've been using the scores, and we have a different protocol for advocacy around those high-risk cases. The officer might say to you, you're more likely to be murdered, women in your circumstance, and then the DA and the advocate would be saying the same thing. So for 5 years, we've had this protocol in place, and we actually started earlier with the protocol. The team, the high-risk team, started meeting in 2017. There was a murder that happened. We had been waiting for additional resources, and a murder happened, and we just said to ourselves, we can no longer wait. We have to convene this team. They meet twice a week, and they review cases. They've reviewed almost 3,500 cases in 5 years, and they've only lost one client to homicide.
Wow.
So their only job when they meet, they do 40 cases a week, is to prevent the homicide from happening. And it's our partners are Milwaukee Police Department, Sojourner, Department of Correction, and the District Attorney's Office. We have lots of other people who refer cases, but in those 30, 40 cases that they review, only job is to prevent the homicide. Very effective model. We published our report about this work, and the governor saw it. We've been in conversation. They give us $1 million that most of it we're going to pass on to our partners. We're going to give them the capacity. For me, I want the team looking at high-risk cases every day. Because when you can only do 40 cases, there's a lot of cases that are left out, and that's a painful situation to be in. For example, the criteria for the team is any sexual assault, domestic violence case, any case where a weapon was used, any case where you were stabbed, burned, shot, or any case where you were strangled, and there's so many strangulation cases, we can only do cases where you were strangled and lost consciousness or lost your bodily functions. strangulation is so prevalent and it is so dangerous. I know. So the money we got from the governor will allow us to give a capacity to our partners. And the team right now is going to be diving in to look at, and we're very grateful for the resources, how can we do high-risk work every single day and even expand it into the weekend if we can. Very important, very effective work. Very critical at this point in time.
Our guest this half hour is Carmen Petrie, who's the CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. And because you were just talking about the high-risk scenarios, and you also mentioned earlier that there's only 53 beds at Sojourner. Mm-hmm. And so, because I saw, I think we talked about this, is it Made? The movie, the series Made.
Right.
Which, without going too deep into it, it's a TV show about a young woman who, at the first kind of couple signs, and her mm-hmm. partner and the father of her child is not actually violent yet, but she makes the choice to try to leave because of his emotional outrage reactions to things. And so much of the series is it's how much money she has and how much, like, it does a tally of she's down to $1.16 and then she gets $10. So for people who are in earlier stages, but it doesn't feel like, well, he hasn't hit me yet.
Yeah. Well, wasn't like,
that? And so what are the resources available when it's before it's gotten too high risk? And because so if there's, even if it starts there as far as the excuses, or it's not that bad, or I shouldn't have said that, and things that are so much earlier before that really violent cycle starts.
That was a brilliant series.
Yeah.
I almost didn't watch it because I thought, I really want to
watch
this, right? But I did, and it was brilliant how they did the economic part with the money. But when she's talking to the social worker, and she's like, the social worker's like, did you call law enforcement? Did you call for help? And she finally says, and say what? That he didn't hit me? You know? So the complexities of the resources that we have available, I think what I would say to someone at the first sign that you begin to feel uncomfortable about not being treated well or respected, you should talk to someone in your life. Don't sit in isolation about that. And certainly if it begins to rise into a problem, obsession, jealousy, control, telling you what you can wear, where you can go, who you can see, and eventually, you know, any name calling, forced sexual activity, and then, you know, if it moves into any subtle physical abuse, definitely reach out as soon as you can in that continuum, because more than likely it will not get better on its own unless somebody or something intervenes. And you deserve help, and the other person needs to change and also deserves help. So I would say find somebody safe in your life. And for those of us out in life, right, how do we be safe people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you come to me, I should make space and hear what you have to say, believe you, and let you know, hey, I'm afraid, I don't know what to do, but I'm committed to helping you. Survivors will tell you that they get judged many times when they try to get help. And, you know, if we do nothing else, don't create any more harm, but commit ourselves to be safe people in the world for women.
Carmen, with Governor Evers in office, he vetoed a bill from the Republican legislature that would have legalized permitless concealed carry. And I know that that is currently the case in states like Texas. And I don't know that you know these statistics offhand, but is that going to be helpful for victims of domestic violence if we get permitless concealed carry in Wisconsin?
Absolutely not. Statistics say if you have a gun in the household, you're 500 times more likely to be murdered. Guns in the hands of people who hurt others is not a good idea across the board. And I think I said earlier before the interview, when things get bad, it's worse for women. And women are vulnerable in this culture. And guns in the hands of people who want to hurt them or anybody, I don't think is a good idea. We're very concerned about weapons. Most of the homicides that have occurred recently have been through with the use of guns. Now, it's not to say that women aren't murdered in other ways, but the destruction you can inflict is increased when you have access to a weapon.
Well, take a big breath. What resources would you like to share and let people know is available or direct people to?
Well, the first thing I would say, since I'm in Waukesha, is the Women's Center down the road. My colleague and friend Angela Mancuso has much of the services that we have in Milwaukee right here in your own county. So I would say the Women's Center, absolutely. Take a look at their website. I should know their phone numbers by heart, but I don't. You can take a look at our website, familypeacecenter.org. We have a hotline, 414-933-2722. You know, reach out in any way that's comfortable for you. Through a website, we have a texting line on our hotline. Whether you are a survivor, if you feel like you're in a dangerous situation, and or you're a loved one and are concerned about someone in your life.
Well, as always, we will link all of those resources to our website on our blog on asgoeswisconsin.com. Carmen, thank you so much for spending time with us. This is a very heavy topic, and I'm hoping Greg can make me laugh for the second half of the show, but it is so important to talk about and keep talking about, because you never know who's being affected by this. And as far as what I think my biggest takeaway is what you said, as far as how do you be a safe person that someone can talk to?
Yeah.
And you reserve judgment and listen to people and know that they still have their autonomy no matter what their situation is.
Exactly.
And so thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You don't need to be coy, bro. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus.